Hello and welcome to Freed from the Real, episode 45, brought to you by www.pmtgo.com and www.mtgotraders.com. You can find us each week at www.pmtgo.com, www.mtgcast.com, and www.mymtgo.com. This is the Freed from the Real podcast, where we bring you Magic Online news, information on prices, tournaments, PMTGO news, and pretty much all the Magic and Magic Online news that you've come to expect from our podcast. So I'll be one of your hosts this week, Eric. With me is AJ. Say hello, AJ.
Hello, everybody.
And say hello, Sebastian.
Hey.
All right, and this week we're hoping that there will be no technical issues and the recording will go through correctly for a change. That'd be a very welcome change. First off, news. We'll kick that off with World Wake spoilers. We'll go ahead and have, I think AJ was the person who added it to the list, so we'll go ahead and have AJ discuss a little bit about the new Jace.
They are slowly revealing cards inch by inch, and this one they revealed by scattering it all over probably just America and sending people out to look for it. Jace the Mind Sculptor is our new Jace. It costs one more than the old one at two colorless and two blue. Mythic rare, as you'd expect. And it's the first Planeswalker with four abilities. The first one, look at top card of target player's library. You may put that card on the bottom of that player's library. Plus two. For zero, you get Brainstorm. For minus one, you get to Unsummon. And for minus 12, you get to make your opponent play a leveler without the benefit of a 10-10 creature.
I like that. That's kind of what, you know, actually all, this is the, this one has five abilities technically. The other ones had four. They also were technically a lightning rod. They tended to eat burn spells pretty well too. But on top of that, yeah, that's a huge, I love the ultimates because they're like, after a while you kind of just forget about them because you almost never need to worry about them because if you get there, you're already going to win. But that's quite a big one, and my guess is people will start using the previous Jace as essentially a wasteland for the new Jace. Even if they're not going to be using all the abilities, they'll probably still use it just to keep people from beating face with the other Jace. Sebastian, do you see any tournament potential for this Jace at four, probably in standard, maybe a Planeswalker deck?
Who knows? I mean, it's hard to tell with this card. My biggest thing was that it has four abilities, and that's just really cool.
Yeah, and first one with a zero ability as well, that you can just do over and over again. I mean, you don't gain anything, but you don't lose anything to essentially... I think it's even better than Brainstorm. You can put them on the bottom of your library, or is it on the top, always?
Just on the top.
Okay,
although
yeah.
You can use the first ability to... first ability is look at the top, put it on the bottom if you want. So you can... effectively do a few filtration tricks that way.
Yeah, and that's for zero. I mean, that's a pretty powerful ability. But it means you're not going to be, you know, building up to the other abilities. But that's still, I think it's still pretty good. And of course, you know,
also the most expensive ultimate we've yet had.
Yes.
At minus 12.
What's the other? Is Bolas is the second most, or is it? I know Elspeth's 8. Because I've actually gotten to hers. Ajani's is 8, I believe, as well. And Chandra's previous one is 10, I think. But that's...
Chandra... The first Chandra was 8.
First was 8. Okay, that's not bad. Yeah, that's a lot of building up, but you've got a plus 2 ability, so that's still a lot of turns of fate sealing someone, I guess, but... So yeah, I'm gonna be. I really don't see that one breaking through the tournaments. But then again, we know four cards out of World Wake, so It's entirely possible that other cards could come up that'll be, for some reason, making it more worthwhile. And plus, he's a Planeswalker with some decent abilities, decent control, built-in abilities. Control decks will love the ability to, you know, look at a card, to brainstorm every turn. So I can see that just for that aspect, and possibly maybe a mill deck or some sort of blue X control deck in Standard. It could certainly see play.
But the only concern you really have to look towards is the mana cost. I mean, it's fairly expensive for a brainstorm.
So. Yes, but it's a brainstorm every turn.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me a lot. Go ahead.
I mean, its biggest thing basically is it can brainstorm. And it can do all these things, but is it fundamentally better than the old Jace? Not necessarily. So
true.
It's I would say as good, but not better than the old Jace. The old Jace is fairly relevant in a lot of different ways. Mm. Drawing cards is always nice. In terms of drawing three cards, playing two back, that's always nice too. So
yeah.
It costs one more, and if history has shown us, people really like 3-mana draw spells,
yeah,
but really hate 4-mana draw spells. So.
One mana makes a big difference, unless that said draw spell is Factor Fiction.
Right, Fiction being the notable exception.
Yeah, that's pretty much the last 4 casting cost draw spell. Well, I guess Gifts is technically 4 casting cost draw spell, but I think the thing that really kills this is it's still sorcery speed abilities. You can't, end of turn, brainstorm or end of turn Fate Seal. You have to do it on your turn, and which means all your fetch land shenanigans will be on your turn. All sorts of things. I mean, the every turn brainstorm plus fetch lands is really strong. Makes me very happy to be playing most of the stuff online, because I've been playing paper and it's killing me. The half the game is shuffling, or cutting a deck, or reshuffling after you harrowed after a Kalani Heart Expedition or whatever. Ugh. It's and this is just going to be insanely amount of shuffling. So I am excited for this new Jace. He looks pretty strong. We'll see what ends up happening. There's quite a few more cards left to spoil, so who knows what could happen at this point. I think there was also another super rumor card from Captain Black, who has done a lot of spoiling for the rumor bill at MTG Salvation in the past, and was talking about kind of like a reverse Kismet. Is Kismet the one that makes everything come into play tapped?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposedly that there might be an artifact that has a reverse-ish Kismet ability. Currently fully speculation, not at all confirmed, but it does make you kind of wonder of the possibilities of it, especially being as it's coming from a known rumor mill quote-unquote hero. So any thoughts about that potential card? Just speaking about theoreticals. I mean, think of cards that come into play tapped as a balance, like the new duels. Any other big ones that you can think of?
Well, there's always Scapeshift.
Oh, Scapeshift, yep.
And it really depends on the mana cost.
Let's go ahead and call it 2, just for fun. Is that 2, what would you do with it?
I play it in Vintage, actually.
Play in Vintage?
With Time Vault.
Hmm.
Time Vault being, it enters into the battlefield tapped, and the trick being that you would have to skip a turn to untap it, but if it's a reverse Kismet and it only costs 2 or 3, then it would come into play untapped. You would automatically take the extra turn, and then you can combo out from there.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that definitely the mana cost will be the key piece. But they've also kind of shown a lack of any type of regard for older formats. I mean, they released the Dark Depths combo fully knowing that there was a 2-card combo that would produce a 20/20 indestructible flying token. So I can see them saying, you know what, whatever. It might break Vintage, it might not. We want it for this certain format, so we'll just go ahead and do it. I mean, they've been proving that more and more lately.
That is true. And, you can always go back and fix it afterwards. So.
Yeah, they can always just, super restrict another card or something. But yeah, so again, super rumor, not at all confirmed even remotely, but something that I'm You know, it's one of those cards, if it's an artifact, it really does kind of make you think, boy, all those things that come into play tapped for power level reasons or for balance suddenly aren't that bad. Like your Kabira Crossroads are now planes that gain you 2 life. Your, you know, other dual lands that come into play tapped are suddenly, you know, have no drawback whatsoever. Was it Slumbering Giant? Comes into play. No, it wasn't Slumbering Giant, but it was a big creature that you'd have to deal damage to it to untap it. Now comes into play untapped, so you can do that. I mean, who knows? Crazy things. Let's see.
Yeah,
other.
Could,
go ahead, AJ.
Well, in terms of stuff being untapped, there's New Frontiers. Now, the reason that puts the stuff in tapped is because it gives everybody lands. And if you get X lands into play untapped, you can imagine how degenerate that could get.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of things that do things into play tapped just to keep things from being broken. So if every color has access to, you know, infinite untapped resources, that's a big, big swing in... I mean, it really kind of redefines the rules of some of these, the power balancing they've done over the years. So if that ends up coming to fruition, I expect to see a lot of Johnny combo-ish decks trying to abuse and break that, because that's just a solidly cool rule-breaking card that they would probably point out as a good way to break a rule that no one really thought would they break. So I certainly do hope that's going to be... something that comes out of World Wake, because that'd be very fun to see all the new decks from, like you mentioned, Vintage to Standard that could then be abused. Be very interesting.
I just checked Standard, actually, and Standard has 34 cards that come into play tapped.
I believe you mean Enter the Battlefield tapped.
Yeah, Enters the Battlefield tapped, and the 34 cards include pretty much most, they're almost all lands.
Yeah.
In fact, they are all lands. With the exception of the border posts, which are the ones that come into play tapped, and you can pay one or return a basic land to your hand in order to let them come into play tapped. Those are the only exception to the rule.
And those are basically land as well. I mean,
pretty much.
Quasi land.
Yeah. So, So pretty much they've built a format that has budget resources that come into play tapped. And now they're possibly releasing something that lets you... I mean, essentially you have to waste some cards in your deck, but you get a fully powered, you know, deck. Oh, suddenly, like, your Terramorphic Expanse becomes a straight-up fetch land of any color. That's pretty cool, too. Yeah, very interesting to see. I wonder if Rupture Spire also becomes a much better card, too.
Looking at older sets, didn't Victimize bring 2 creatures from your graveyard to play tapped?
You're going to have to explain what that card is. That's before my time.
What? Victimize. It was a effectively a zombify variant back from Urza's block, which we'll be getting next year. You sacrifice a creature, and you can put 2 creatures from your graveyard onto the battlefield, tapped, I think. I think it was that, anyway.
Yeah, that would be a much more cool effect. So definitely, I'm interested in seeing what happens with that. I don't know if it'll ever end up happening, but just a thought is pretty fun. Let's see. Oh, other news. We'll go ahead and move to other news. I think that wraps up our spoilers, unless anybody else has anything to add.
There's not much to say. The spoiler season hasn't really started yet.
Very true, very true. So moving on to other Magic Online news, the Magic Online Pro Tour qualifier season has been announced for extended season for San Juan. The link will be in our show notes. The format will be extended for all of them. They'll be starting early January, January 2nd, Saturday morning. And the interesting thing, I say interesting in the sense that I'm interested to see the reaction, is it'll be the extended deck you bring plus 25 tickets. Now, people will recall that the sealed PTQs were 30 tickets. So for 5 less tickets, 5 whole tickets, you get a constructed format. Now, as Sebastian will probably mention, that's about what they pay for PTQs in paper, right?
Mm-hmm. a 30 for a sealed PTQ and 25 for a regular PTQ.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really that different from what paper players would expect, but definitely is different from what the Magic Online players have expected for any type of event. I think 10 tickets for the premier events got quite a bit of backlash, at least for the fringe formats. So it stands to reason that you'll probably have a little bit easier time with these Pro Tour qualifiers, at least in the beginning of the season, when there's still options for the players in paper. And my guess is, based on kind of how things work out, is in the beginning, when there's plenty of options for the paper players and plenty of ways for them to get to San Juan through their own means locally, they'll probably not worry about Magic Online. But at the end of the season, when all the easy options for them have been taken away or used up, they'll probably look at joining Magic Online PTQs, which means the turnout and the competition will probably go up towards the end of the season, whereas in the beginning, they don't really want to worry about dealing with Magic Online until they've exhausted their local PTQ scene. So I'm interested in seeing what happens with that, which if that does pan out, then that would stand to reason that the earlier part of the season will be mostly just Magic Online players, and probably not people who have, you know, it's their last-ditch effort. So my guess is they'll be a little bit less on the line feeling at the beginning, and that'll be the best time to get into the Pro Tour for San Juan if you're looking at doing that and getting to that point. So that's my thoughts. Sebastian, any thoughts about that?
You know, the true PTQers who really want to do it probably will be there from the get-go. But, I mean, there definitely was some kind of backlash from the crashing PTQs from last season. I went to a PTQ this past weekend, didn't do as well as I hoped, partially due to my own fault, probably didn't play as well as I should have, and my sealed pool didn't have anything, but that's a completely different thing. And you know, people there were saying they just couldn't stand the lag sometimes. Sometimes it just took too long, had too much lag, and the system was great at first, and then towards the tail end of the events, they switched it up from the two qualifying tiers into the 1 6-round tournament to a huge 10-round tournament. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you have 10 rounds, you have to literally go 10-0, which is a lot harder if you're playing a sealed event or a limited event than, say, a constructed event, because so much of it's so dependent on how you deal with your sealed deck.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope to see a lot of people come out from the get-go. I'll personally be going out from the get-go as well. That's my plan right now. Probably not the January 2nd one, as because it's a conflict with a real-life event. But after that, probably try to find some time for a couple of PTQs or two or three this season. I haven't really played PTQs the last season, and I sort of regret that.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at probably getting into extended, at least to see how well I can, you know, how good I can get in the interim, because it's not just the PTQs that are going to be using the extended tournament. There's also the first end of season MOX tournament will be using the extended format as well. So if you get good enough and are, you know, maybe grinding during the week, maybe getting 8-player queues in, maybe getting premier events in, if they can get those to fire, you'll probably wind up getting qualified for the MOX over time. And if that ends up happening, then hey, you've got, you know, an extra event to kind of cash in on. So we'll cover a little bit more about the tournaments in the Pro Tour tournaments in the tournament section coming up a little bit later, but for the most part, it looks like it's going to be pretty spendy. You can't just, you know, I don't think everyone's going to be able to get into these. Just the, I mean, if you build a cheap burn deck, you're still going to have to come up with another $25 just to hop into one of the queues and hope for the best. So seems cost prohibitive, but then again, we're talking about, you know, the upper echelon of Magic tournaments, which means it's not for everyone, and it's not open to everyone, essentially. It's open for those that have the funds to do so. That's not really any different,
right,
from...
And, of course, you know, the Mild Red deck is viable again, so
yeah,
have fun, everybody.
Yeah, it's both, I think, extended and standard viable at this point.
Yes, they are. Mostly because there are people tend to disregard the ability of a deck to just play and not play mono red from time to time. And when you disregard a deck, it tends to bite you in the butt.
Yeah, and mono red's one of those decks that no one takes. It's the Rodney Dangerfield of decks. No one takes it seriously, so they don't worry. You know, they don't put sideboard stuff in. They just assume they're going to be able to beat it. And they worry about maybe affinity or some sort of dredge. And then, you know, burn comes out and, you know, steals some giant win. At least that's kind of what I hope for. It's definitely one of those decks that I think I think it's solid. I think you could probably put it together for pretty cheap, and it has a decent matchup, especially because right now Extended's mana base is very similar to what Classic's mana base was before we got the original duels, which means an aggro deck is taking about 5 points of damage a game from just their lands, and a control deck will need to take some damage if they're going to hit their mana drop in their colors. So they'll take at least three or so. Just trying to keep up with your spells seems like a decent format for Burn, because I know Burn was higher than it should have been back when Classic was around because it didn't have the duels. And given that we're looking at Ravnica duels and Zendikar Fetchlands, and if you don't have to run a painful mana base, you'll definitely have a leg up on the Zoo player. But you have to win before Baneslayer hits. That's just pretty much the only thing that you have to do. Speaking of big ol' angels, or I should say sphinxes, brings us to our prices. Sphinx of the Steel Wind went up another half a ticket to 13.5. I'm not exactly sure where that deck found its home, but it's taken off a lot. It could be straight Esper. We were talking about this a little bit before the show. Could be straight Esper. Could be summoning trap decks that have been floating around. Those type of decks. But they've definitely gone up. Tarmogoyf, an extended staple at this point, is up over 32 again to 34. And Oath of Druids is about 36 tickets, which some people did some quick math and said that something like 12 people, if everyone pooled their Oath of Druids together, about 12 people could play with an Oath of Druids deck. That's about how many were opened due to drafting and events that fired, which is safe to say a very, very small amount.
That's really small.
Yeah, so people seem to be of the opinion of one of like, polarizing opinion, more or less that either that it's, you know, if Classic doesn't get these things to fire, it's going to be too expensive and no one's going to, you know, get into Classic because these, you know, these singles are too high. But what it kind of means to me is if it's that high, there's an easily way to be subsidized for playing these limited events when they swing around. Like whenever the Tempest Stronghold Exodus drafts come around and the Nyx packs queues or whatever, hop in them. You'll be getting enough value out of the cards you can resell to bots to probably play many times. That's what I did during the Exodus drafts. It worked out well. I could resell a triple Exodus draft for more than it cost to buy the packs and enter. That seems odd, but it worked out. So hey, you know, those, you gotta look for those type of opportunities to pretty much subsidize your playing, and Exodus provided one of those. Other than that, do you guys have any prices you've noticed or thought about or looked into this week? Have you guys been playing anything specifically that kind of caught your attention of being expensive or cheap all of a sudden?
Well, personally, when I went to the PTQ, I checked with the dealer there and asked him how much a foil Pain Slayer was worth. And the number I got was somewhere in the ballpark of $125, $130.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was sort of expensive, mm-hmm. to say the least. So, I mean, Bane Slayer is definitely expensive in real life, too, apparently.
Yeah.
I was checking on a few prices for a few friends who you were testing with for various Fringe formats. And I found out that Vesuva is up to 3.5. Could be maybe there's a Cloud Post deck coming up with this extended, or maybe it's just limited supply and fairly high demand.
Vesuva? Is that...
That's the land...
Yeah, copies. Does that maybe for some sort of Valakut deck, perhaps?
Could be Valakut. Could be Dan. Could be just for anything, really.
Hmm.
Nice about it, actually. Good call.
Yeah. That would be my first thought, is that there's finally a card that's really wants eight of them in a deck besides Cloud Post. But interesting. We need some land destruction. That's what we need in Standard, really. I mean, it's not even remotely close to being able to control any of these. I mean, essentially the best land destruction is like Spreading Seas, which is kind of a sad thing. Probably could have some better options there. I'm hoping we'll see something maybe in World Wake that balances that out, because that's a bit That's a bit silly.
The pendulum always swings back.
Yeah.
I mean, but the thing is, land destruction's up there with counterspells and spells that people really hated to see and hoped wizards would power down, so.
Well, they got their wish, and now people are dying to Valakut, which they can't stop, and now they curse Valakut because they can't stop it. It's ironic.
I mean, there still is. There still is, what's it called? Goblin Rune Blaster, so.
Or Demolish.
But once again, you're at 4 mana, but I guess that's alright. Maybe. I don't know. It just seems a little underwhelming at 4. I miss our 3 mana. Oh well, but I'll lament later. Any other thoughts on prices? Yeah, Baneslayer, ridiculous. She's still over 40 tickets apiece online. About 50-ish in paper, give or take. So she's looking for a fall. Either if she's reprinted, she'll fall because there'll be a bunch more in circulation, and if she's not reprinted, she'll fall because she'll be no longer worthwhile to have. So I shouldn't say that. She'll be less likely to be necessary and extended, so she's going to fall at some point. It's just now a matter of when. Tournaments. As we mentioned, extended PTQs, $25 a pop, starting in January. There's also the Magic Online Championship Series coming up. Both are going into extended first seasons, so look to get some extended decks going. I'm probably going to switch off from my mono red standard deck to playtesting extended. I'm not exactly sure what. Maybe a Zoo deck, maybe Burn, maybe Tezzerator, although that one looks like it's complex enough that the amount of time I would need to actually, you know, be able to make the proper decisions would be prohibitive. So I might have to maybe figure something else that'll work better. But looks like a pretty interesting format. I hadn't really looked at it too much since Worlds, and Worlds isn't really an extended, it just has a day of extended stuff, so I'm not really a super great example of what the format should be, but we're talking in, AJ, you mentioned Dark Depths, Hypergenesis, no, Sebastian mentioned Hypergenesis, AJ mentioned Dark Depths, so pretty cool decks in the format, some combo. If you were going to pick up a deck tomorrow to play Sebastian, what would it be?
Tomorrow? Mono red burn. I've played it so many times. If I had all the cards available to me, I might try to play the Hive Mind deck that I've been working on in the back of my mind. The Hive Mind deck being just ridiculously cool. But Mono Red Burn tends to have all the answers to most of the combo decks in the format, with the exception of Hypergenesis. And even with Hypergenesis, you can try to win without ever having them combo off. So yeah. Mono Red Burn, given how much I know about the format, would sound like a good idea to me.
Sure. How about you, AJ? If you had to pick an extended deck to play tomorrow, what would it be?
All in red. Take the brakes off, slam into his face, no questions asked, no going back.
So, and no hand. And no hand. I mean, that really does reduce the amount of things you have to worry about towards the end of the game. You're like, oh, I got nothing in hand, so I guess I'm done.
Why worry?
Why worry? For myself, I like Red Burn a lot right now, so probably either Burn or Zoo. I'm thinking maybe Dark Depths, but that's fairly easy to hate out. Something that's probably not too complex. Even though, you know, Red Burn is more complex than people think, it's still not nearly as complex as something like Tezzerator or a full-on combo deck that you actually have a lot of any type of counting combo deck, like Storm or, you know, those type of decks. Storm no longer really an issue, I guess, but still plenty of combo decks are really hard to play. Control decks, equally so. That's what I like about the aggro deck. It's just, you know, you can pick it up, play a few games, get a feel for what threats you need when, and go with it. So I'll probably pick up a red deck as well. A red deck wins. But so we'll see what happens. My guess is the first couple of PTQs will be won by aggressive decks or combo decks. Control decks always take longer to build up once they realize what the metagame is and what needs to be, you know, what can't resolve and what can. That's when you start to see the control decks take over. So I'm looking for probably something that has good game against aggro and a decent matchup against combo at first. But that's just my first initial thoughts on the PTQ metagame. And there's a couple changes, actually, to the 2010 championship Magic Online Championship Series. We'll go ahead and cover those really quickly. If you win a premier event, you get 6 qualifier points. If you take second place in a premier event, you get 5. Third and fourth get 4. Fifth through eighth get 3. If you 4-0 a daily event, you get 3. If you 3-1 a daily event, you get 1. First through eighth of the weekend challenges get 3 points. And any 8-plus player queue, first place gets 1 point. So essentially drafts get you a point. The premier events can really rack up points fast for the top 4. That's probably a really good thing. I think they were flatter previously. So now there's a little bit easier, a little bit more gentle curve to the qualifier points. Perhaps the quickest way to get them is probably in the daily events at, 4-0 records gets you, 3 qualifier points for a 4-hour event. That's not that bad. That'd be like taking third or fourth in the premier event, which I'm thinking you can rack up a few more daily events than you can, PEs. So that's probably a little bit easier way to go. Sebastian, did you play much in the mocks last season?
No, I mean, I qualified for a couple of them, but even those, I really didn't even play, and I just cashed out. Mm-hmm. The timing was sort of off. I had some friends who attempted them, but generally, there's such large tournaments. You have to be semi-lucky and semi-good to be able to qualify for them. I'm looking forward to possibly qualifying for them right now, but to be honest, I'm not running very hard right now. I'm running pretty cold outside of side poker. I mean, it's looking pretty bad. My magic, I think I'm down 50 picks for this the last couple of months, so it's going to be interesting to see. I definitely really want to play, though. I always draft, so drafting's a lot of fun, but constructed is the way to go to qualify for anything, so
yeah,
hopefully it'll turn out.
Yep. I think the points have changed a little bit. I think it's 10 to 14 points gets you qualified the last chance qualifier. 15 to 24 gets you qualified to the end of season championship. 25 to 34, you're qualified and you get 1 bye. 35 to 44, you're qualified and get 2. And 45 plus points, you're qualified and get 3 byes. So the more you play, the higher up you get on your qualifier points, the higher you pretty much start your day on. You start off like 3-0. So that's definitely the way to go for these big tournaments, because starting 3-0 and then, going from there is so much better than having to fight for those first 3 wins and hoping to go 3-0 at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's why those buys are so well-loved in the Paper Magic community, because essentially you get to kind of unwind and prepare for the first 3 hours while people are 2 hours or whatever, while everyone else is grinding and, getting their adrenaline up and crashing and, maybe freaking out a little bit or going on tilt. You get that.
And it also reduces the amount of luck that's required for, say, limited, for example. If you have 3 buys, you only have to post a 3-3 record in sealed limited, and then you can try to, win out during draft, which is considered more still intensive format.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. So sealed is huge. Even standard, even constructed, you can then scout, some opponents and stuff. With a few hundred people, you can't really scout that well. But, you have much more time to prepare, get ready, kind of get the feel for how things are going. Definitely makes a lot of difference. So my goal will be this year to at least get into a mox season. I'd love to get into season 1 for Yawgmoth's Will. But we'll see if I can, scrounge that together. But it's... Being that I'm actually finally getting back into Constructed and posting decent results in Constructed, it shouldn't be all that difficult for me to maybe justify, the additional work to get into a mox qualifying sort of schedule. So that's my goal. I'm hoping to maybe get into that one this first time around. That'd be great. Let's see. Anything else for news? It's, again, been kind of a slow week. Not a lot going on besides those couple of news announcements. That brings us to what you've been playing. And we'll go ahead and kick off with AJ. AJ, what you been playing?
I've been testing for a few of the fringe and casual formats, helping out a few people with their decks as well. Specifically, corset constructed, and as ever, tribal. With the tribal PRE last weekend, I tried to port across all in red from extended through to tribal classic, using Diwari the Earth of Flame as an uncounterable sweeper, which controlled extend to hate, and what was the final piece? Ah, yes, Adamaro, the one which counts the cards in your opponent's hand. Drop that on the first turn, and it's quite fun.
And he has haste too, doesn't he?
Afraid not, no. But
oh, he should have haste.
He is pretty hard anyway. I can't complain. It's a fun little deck which didn't do quite as well as it should have done.
So you're gonna maybe tweak it a little bit, head back in.
Maybe, or maybe just go for Birds Control with Moat, Story Circle, and other nasty things which Tribal doesn't really cope with well.
Right. You should probably play Silliman's Legacy and Artless Evolution.
Been there, done that, didn't quite work.
Ah, you can make it work. I trust your skills. You can make it work.
Sometimes I feel like the Dick Dastardly of these tournaments always come out with bizarre and convoluted plots which never quite get me over the finish line.
Do you start monologuing, like telling them about your evil schemes?
Drat and double drat, but yeah.
Exactly. Let's see. How about you, Sebastian? What you been playing?
I've been testing a green white splash red Naya boss Naya deck. It's for the 5K. Unfortunately, something's changed in the meta game, and it's either a combination of the mulligans I've been taking or bunch of other things that's just I'm just not winning as much as I used to. So it's annoying, and I'm looking to see where I can adapt the deck, possibly switch back to my old standard, which is burn as always. But from there, in terms of extended though, a lot of reborn packs are just so cheap, it's so hard to, you know, play the format, because you know you're taking a loss whether you win or lose.
Yeah, so that's the, well, it's not even gonna get any better when they can kill off Alara packs altogether and switch them to one mega pack.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I wonder what they'll do for the prizes. Maybe they'll pay out Alara super packs. Maybe. I'd actually like to see them pay out, like, maybe Marodin, like the oldest extended legal block, maybe. I don't know. Something. Anything besides freaking Alara reborn packs.
You know, I would prefer M10, actually.
Well, obviously. Alara reborn at this point. Anything would be better than Alara Reborn. I mean, you think even Champions would be better than Alara Reborn, which is horrible to even think that, which just goes to show how bad the EV for these prizes are. I mean, granted, it's not all about EV. I mean, if I'm playing in a two-man queue, I'm playing it for, at this point, the experience and hoping to get a, you know, a break-even pack, but ugh, it is hard when I'm playing, you know, standard and I'm getting, you know, $350, $375 packs, and you know, extended, you get $250, I think, is what they retail for after on the aftermarket, if that.
You know, yeah, if that, it's hard to tell. Ugh. It sometimes goes for more or less. So
yeah, might as well just crack it and hope for, like, maybe a, is that Pulse and Hierarchs in that?
Yeah, there are Pulse and Hierarchs. And was Night of the Reliquary in Complex or Alara Reborn?
I don't know, but yeah,
it's in Complex.
Yeah, that beats. Yeah. I don't know. It's frustrating because I want to get into it, but at the same time, I'm thinking, man, even if I play and win these 2-man queues and 8-man queues, it's still I'm not doing well. I'm not. Yeah, I mean, the whole point of playing these things is, you know, that you don't have to pay for extra stuff. So, yeah, we'll see what ends up happening with that. I think someone did the math on another site. It was something like you have to win 6-0, and then you and then if you lose, you're back to square one. That's bad. That's just so bad. But it, I mean, it is what it is. We'll have to. If you're interested in playing extended, you're probably just gonna have to deal with that, even if it's frustrating. So. That's mostly what I'm thinking will end up happening is people will just play it because there's really no other way to get the practice for the bigger tournaments that they're going to want to play in. So I hope they change something up soon, but we'll see what happens with that, I guess. Oh, I guess I should talk about what I've been playing. Finished off the week with my Jund deck in paper. I went 3-1 at my local FNM. Not bad, not bad. Had a really rough match game round three that I lost to a essentially summoning trap deck. I mulliganed to six, kept a one or a two lander. Didn't see land for a while, and I still drug it out to like turn 13 or 14 or so. Almost had him. Top decking any burn would have won it for me, but alas, that didn't happen, and I lost to an Iona Shield of the Emeria, but I made a heck of a run with it. Main decking I actually started main decking the Vampire Nighthawks before Worlds revealed them. Those because I looked at my deck and Putrid Leeches were just not doing it against so many things. So many things were brought in to stop them. Wall of Denial, all sorts of things that we couldn't, you know, burn out. You couldn't kill it. But you throw, you know, a Vampire Nighthawk in there and suddenly they can't block it, you know, profitably anymore. So that's very nice and definitely lets you race some other aggro decks. That was a fun change to the deck, and also running some main deck Chandras to sort of give me a little bit more reach in the late game. Just two of those, because, you know, might as well. But other than that, it was a great tournament. Paper and Magic Online, I've been playing Red Deck Wins, obviously. I've been talking about that quite a bit lately. It's a fun deck. Relatively difficult to play. More difficult the more I play it, the more I realize how much better I could be with it. Just determining when to use a Lightning Bolt versus a whatever the Burst Lightning is. Sometimes I would hold back the Burst Lightning, or I would use the Burst Lightning incorrectly in the beginning, and I've learned quite a bit about how to play that a little bit more properly, so that's certainly been helpful. And really enjoying that deck, and probably play some version of an extended, but obviously with much better things. Probably Flames the Blood Hand for that stupid Kitchen Finks, since there's a lot of powerful things to do with Kitchen Finks now with Orin Reef the Vastwood putting counters on it. You kind of want to punish that, so certainly interesting. And that'll wrap up what you've been playing. Moving on to PRMTGO news, article of the week. There's a really slim amount of articles this week. I mean, we only had about seven from this time last week. So we'll go ahead and kick off with AJ. What did you pick and why?
I went with Lord Erman's Rogue Play, the basics of Momia Basic, because it was a timely primer on strategy for the most luck-based format in the game. just in time for the free tournament coming up on December 27th. 27th or 26th?
27th, 23rd, Sunday. Sunday, the 27th.
Yep. So anybody who wants to know the immense amount of strategy involved in tapping mana and hoping, discarding a land and hoping for the best, then check the article out. And, well, there is some strategy involved in terms of what lands you actually play. But besides that, it's pretty much a case of hit and hope.
Yeah, actually there is. The biggest thing that I took away from that article, which was a very good article, by the way, was islands are not your friends until the end of the game. And even then, be careful playing them, because most of the landwalkers that you'll get of them, the dangerous ones are islands, and you can avoid most activated abilities, don't call for islands, so there's really no point in having them out. So that would be the biggest piece to take away from that article was islands at the end, if at all. Slant your deck towards mountains and swamps. Most good activated abilities use those colors, and kind of follow from there. It was a very good article, absolutely. And there is actually a little bit of strategy in the deck construction, a little bit of strategy on what, you know, drops to try and what drops to skip if you're going to go that route. Yes, it's a solid article and definitely applicable to the upcoming event, which I'm certainly planning on playing because it's a large chunk of free events or free points for the Magic Online player rewards, because it's going to be a big turnout, free to get avatars of your choice if you do certain records. I mean, at worst case scenario, it's a free event that you're going to get some probably a promo or two level out of it, because you're doubling for December as well. So that's pretty cool too. Sebastian, what was your article of the week and why?
I don't really have an article of the week per se. I definitely have to say props to William Spaniel's ongoing series. It's good to have him on PRMTGO. He is quite the writer after all. So that's basically it on my end. Not much to say, except that's a very good statistical analysis of what's being played and limited. And it's worth a read if you still play the now defunct Zendikar sealed format.
Yep, I think by the time he wraps that up, we'll have World Wake, which is good timing. Coming, my selection was Archgenius, a.k.a. Let me get his name here. It's so hard. He's actually in my clan now. It's Shuyin, Knight of Zanarkand, which is a nod to Final Fantasy X, I believe. Zanarkand being the plane that it takes place on. He wrote, coming in January, Shards of Alara booster and sealed deck tournaments. Which is kind of funny because, you know, we've had Shards of Alara block booster and sealed deck tournaments for a good year now. But the difference is this is running it with the mega pack that we were talking about a little bit earlier. And he kind of breaks down, you know, the good, the bad about them, and what we'll be doing, and what that'll be doing for the prizes and what that'll be doing for essentially the format. And it may breathe a little bit more life into it. Maybe it won't make any difference whatsoever. Worst case scenario, I think there'll be a lot of people playing with their leftover packs in sealed events at the very least. So if you're looking to pick up some, maybe Knights of the Reliquary or Maelstrom Pulses or those type of cards, that'll probably be the time to shop around. Those will probably be a bit easier to get a hold of. People looking to flip those back into boosters to, you know, get a couple more free drafts or free seals in. So be a good time to look at picking them up. And that was my my pick for the week. That wraps up for the week. We have pretty much nothing else to talk about. Hopefully everyone's had a great week. And we will see you all next week, probably in between Christmas and New Year's Eve here in the States. So until then, have a great week, and best of luck to everybody.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Merry Christmas.